So good morning, everyone. I'm going to speak briefly in introduction of our first Dharma talk in our 16th annual Vallecitos, People of Color Silent Meditation Retreat. We'll have four Dharma talks, and the first is given by the most venerable Suhita Dharma, who we call Bhante. So, the most venerable Suhita Dharma has been a monk since he was 14 and a half years old. He was ordained as the last of the so-called baby monks or child monks in the Trappist order, having been raised a Catholic. And from there, he went on to, after he encountered the Buddha Dharma, to become a fully ordained Buddhist monk, or bhikkhu, where he received the name Suhita Dharma. He's also known by his Vietnamese Dharma name and has recently been elevated in the Vietnamese Buddhist Church to what is the equivalent of a bishop. So that rank is called Hoa Thuan. And his Dharma name there is An Duc. He is vice abbot of Chua Du Pha, a Vietnamese temple in San Gabriel, California, in the Los Angeles area. And he has also been ordained in all of the lineages of the Dharma, of Buddhism, the Mahayana, the Theravada, and the Vajrayana, as well as holding shamanic initiations from some of the tribes in Mexico, where he now resides part of the time in Juarez at his hermitage, and leads a group called Seeds of Compassion, and also resides part of the time at the Vietnamese temple in San Gabriel. I've known Bhante for 26 years, and I can't tell you how delighted I am that he is here with us to share some of his experience and his Dharma this morning and throughout the retreat.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. First, I have a question for everyone to think about. And that question is, do you know the true name of Buddhism? That's the question. Later on, if you have the answer, tell me, and then during the meeting, I will tell you the talk, I'll tell you the true name. But do any of you have an idea what the true name is? Buddhism, that's not the name. That's the name we gave, the Westerners, we gave to the religion. And the true name is called the Puttasasana, the Buddha's dispensation or way. That is the true name of Buddhism. And it is open to everyone who wished to take a step to go on that path. I myself personally find that I practice what is called now practical Buddhism. It's where you can take the Dhamma and you can take any form of meditation and you can do discernments in your practice so that you'll grow no matter where you are or what you're doing, whether it's at work, at home, at play, riding the buses, the trains. Because when we do our practice, there's always a test. And this is how you can discern and use it in your daily life. And you can use mindfulness. But I want to take you back a little bit to my best experiences with Buddhist practices in Thailand. I think that's one of the best places to go and practice, especially if you want to ordain a monk. It's one of the better places to go in the whole world. Because the people, they know the rules, they know the precepts, they know the customs. So, then they are also very helpful in helping you follow the practice in many ways. And one of the first things that really happened to me when I went to Thailand, the temple I lived in was, the name is Wat Pak Nam Bachisuran. It has a very unique meditation practice. A lot of you probably know it from what is known now as Tamakai. That originated from that original temple. The abbot, the former abbot who passed away years ago, was the teacher. And then he taught students. And then the students taught us. And they taught us through giving instructions. And then we go and do the practice. And then maybe three or four times a day that we had appointments where we'd go back and we'd go to the teacher. And then he would ask us, how did we do in our meditation practice? How did you do in your sitting practice? How did you do in your walking practice? And what happened when you first lift your foot up and you move it forward? How did you feel? And for me, the first time I'd done it, it was like a baby trying to learn how to walk. I felt clumsy. And in fact, I fell down a number of times, so I expressed that to him. And then he would give us instructions. Then we go back, and then we'll do the practice 24/7. 24/7, you do the practice. And we go back to the teacher again. And at the same time, he will give us more instructions and advice on how to continue the practice, because we be trying to discern all the different feelings and different emotions and all the things that was happening inside of us. And those feelings and emotions and things that was happening inside of us taught us how to become spiritual scientists. You become a spiritual scientist. And you start learning step by step by step how to discern what is going on this, you know. Oh, I'm feeling angry. But at the same time you have this feeling of anger, something else might arise on this side at the same time. It's totally opposite. And they sort of come together. Or you might be sitting in meditation and you start to feel pain, especially when you're new. And then the pain, it's like waves. They go like that. And you begin to discern and you notice the feeling size moving like waves. Then it subsides. And you notice that it subsides. And then for a few moments, you feel a little bit elated because you're not having that pain. The pain has sort of subsided. It's gone away. And you're sitting in your meditation quietly. And then all of a sudden, a pain will come like you never felt before. And it'll come in either in your back or in your legs, in your thighs. It'll come. It'll just all of a sudden it'll go whoosh and you feel it. Oh, and you moan and you feel it. Sometimes it brings tears to your eyes. And then you discern to yourself, why am I crying? Why am I just having tears? And that's because, simply, it's because we're feeling pain. But where did this pain come from? I was very comfortable. I was relaxed. And then after that, something else happens that you have to learn how to discern. The feelings, your feelings, and especially long, deep-sided, very deep emotional things. I learned over the years that meditation is like a form of remembering, because it will take you back into time. Even sometime when you're a child, and all your emotions and all the things that happen to you from the time you are born all the way up to this present time will begin to unfold. And you begin to see all these different things. Then, to balance your meditation practice, you learn how to do loving kindness, the practice of loving kindness. But if you never experience loving and kindness yourself, it's very difficult to do. You know, some people like that little itchy feeling, feel good. You know, I want to feel good thing that comes from loving kindness. But if you've never experienced loving kindness, you're not going to get the feel good feeling. So what you have to do is start with you personally. And one of my friends told me, oh, I'm getting so tired of saying, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Oh, I'm so tired of it. I said, keep on doing it, keep on doing it, and then one day you will experience something. And sure enough, after a long time of doing that, he felt something. He felt that spark. And the time he felt that spark of loving kindness is that we was on our way downtown, San Francisco, on the way downtown, and we saw a lady. See, a lot of you are, you know, much younger than me, but there used to be a lady who used to go on Market Street and she used to push her cart. And she could not live inside any dwelling. Because she witnessed five of her kids burned alive years ago. So she could never do that. And he saw this lady, and she was down on Market. And you know we have the bricks, the little cobblestone bricks on Market Street. And she would dig them up one by one by one. And they would try to bring in for help. She would stay a while, but she could never live inside. And then sadly enough, one day, she was hit by a car. It was a hit and run, and she passed away. But most of us in those days in San Francisco, we knew the lady. We saw the lady, and we tried to help her out. We knew her story and everything about what happened to her. And that spark of loving kindness was ignited when he saw that lady. You felt it. And that was the beginning of learning the true meaning of loving kindness and compassion. That's why it's always advisable to start with yourself first. And to help yourself along, you can go to your mother, your father, people you love, you know, first. Then you can go to people who are not so close. Then you can go to people that you might not know. Then you can go to the greatest teachers of all, your enemies, people you hate and can't stand, that you love to strangle and choke and do all those things too. So once you reach that stage, then you can get the loving kindness to develop much more and much stronger. So when the circumstances arise, that feeling of compassion and loving kindness for your friends, your neighbors, your brothers, and your sisters, you will feel it right here in your heart. Right here in your heart, you'll feel a little ding, a little twing. You'll feel that little pressure. It'll give a rise to, sometimes even bring tears. You know, different situations, in different places, and no matter where you are. Then you know that you're on the right track when you practice the loving kindness. And you always read the sutras on loving kindness. And you always read the sutras of what the Buddha has tried to teach us. And when you start learning the sutras and reading the sutras, I'm talking about the real sutras, the true sutras, we're going really into things that most of us find might be boring, might be a little bit boring, and we might not be able to relate to it. But once you do your practice, you will find that all the things the Buddha taught way back when, all the things that are written in 108 books, plus thousands and thousands of commentaries, then sub-commentaries, sub-sub-commentaries, somebody else's view, north, south, east, west, north, and center, we have all those books, which we cannot finish in a lifetime, then we'd be able to discern and see the true steps of what the Buddha is trying to teach us. He told us to come and see. Don't pay any attention to what he says. Don't pay any attention to what your culture says. Don't pay any attention to what your family says. Don't pay any attention to what your religion says. And also doubt yourself. Then, take the step, and you can learn the true meaning of what the Buddha taught. And once you learn the true meaning, that gives you the confidence, the courage, and the strength, the compassion, and the loving kindness to follow that path. That's when you can say, I am a follower of the Puttasasana. That's when you can actually say that. Because we don't convert. We guide, we teach. You know, there are some who try. You know. But critical as I am about those sort of things, and Mushim knows how critical I could be, I don't pay any attention to it. The only thing I pay attention to is what I have learned so far and what my teachers have taught me, what I have experienced, and then I use that as my guide. Like now, I'm much older now, body's falling apart, and it's beautiful. I'm quite happy. You know, I don't run around with a long face. I'm quite happy because now I can discern and watch this experience. You know, if there was other experiences in the past, I don't remember them. But this one I can watch, you can see, you can watch it unfold. You know, oh, my back hurt, oh, my foot hurt. You know, oh, I better be careful or I'll fall and break my hip. All these different things. That watching the body changing, watching the mind changing, watching everything changing, just like he says. Yeah. And if you want to become a spiritual scientist and experience these things for yourself, get yourself a microscope. Go home, put your hand under it, and see what you will discover. There's a whole world right here. I don't care how much we scrub. It's there. There's a whole world here, all over us. I don't care how much perfume we use, you know. How much, what is this stuff they use? Neutrogena or something?
Sure.
Shea and all these different products to be beautiful, you know, for the moment. But it's not a bad thing. I'm not against it, you know, because I like nice smelling things myself. You know, I was telling Misham about that. I like those kind of things myself. You know, when I leave here to go home, incense burning, beautiful oils all over the place, and I'm in seventh heaven. And that's my nature. But when I come here, then I have to be nice. And don't use those things, you know. And, but getting back to the story of the Buddha Dhamma, it is an amazing thing. And one thing I can say for sure, it works. It worked for me. But I'm also very grateful and respectful of my birth religion as well, which is Catholic. And some of my Thai monk friends, they used to call me, they call me a Buddhalic. proud Buddhalic. But if it wasn't for the beginning, I would have never had the opportunity to learn the things that I have learned over the years. But we have to take each step one at a time. You know, it's not like having instant noodles, you know. And my favorite instant noodle is Mama. She knows Mama. He knows Mama. And that's my favorite one. And another favorite thing that I like a lot is Nombrik. And I always keep a supply. You know, later when the retreat is over, if you want to know what that is, then you can ask our brother and sister here. They'll tell you what it is. It's a very good Thai thing. Very good Thai thing. And but anyway, getting back to the wonders of the Dhamma. Try to read as much as you can of the original teachings that we have today. You know, and you'll find those in the Southern School. Then you can move into other forms of study, into the Mahayana, and then are you the Vajrayana? Or Zen, you know. But if you're into Vipassana, insight, it is very to try to read as much as you can of the earlier Buddhist teachings. Because they are valid today, as just as it was any other time in history. But you have to discover these things for yourself, you know. I can tell you about them, but you have to have the right effort. You have to take the first step, and you have to make all the right moves to get to the point that I want to know. When I start studying, learning about Buddhism, I went in with the attitude is this: who, what, when, where, and why. And I was the same way when I was doing my studies as a Catholic, you know. And I used to, I had a hard time with a lot of my Catholic school teachers, especially the nuns. And I was taught also by monks, Benedictine monks, and they're kind of hard. They're almost as bad as the Jesuits. Yeah, and Jesuits are very difficult. And you have to learn to overcome that guilt, because we learn as children the steps as it goes into Buddhism. Catholicism. And so we have to learn. And one thing I can guarantee you and tell you this, if you practice, and you practice with an open mind, with loving kindness, with respect, and overcome, you will overcome that particular type of guilt, or any other guilt that you might feel, or you feel in your heart. We can overcome those things. If I can do it, you can do it. Anybody else on this planet can do it. Because really, to be honest with you, I can really tell you some horror stories. But you have to wait and see if I write the book or not. I'm very undecided about that, because there's some horror stories, and I try to not say things that's not nice about others. So, what time?
It's 10:25.
Okay.
We're going to go till 11.
Till 11?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's go back to my experiences, which I like to share with you. Especially if you go to practice at a place like Thailand, especially. When I first went to Wat Phat Nam, I had to go, there were what you call klongs. We call it like bayous or waterways. And so they took me on the boat, one of those little sleek, fast boats. And you go up and you go to the dock there. And sometimes some of these docks, they move, you know. And first day, and I went to step on the dock. And I ended up in the clone. All the time in that vicinity, saw what happened. And all of them jumped in the water at the same time, trying to pull me out. And I'm still wondering what's happening. Because over Wat Phat Nam, we have a water problem. You know, we have floods and we have all kinds of water problems we used to have over there. This was back in the day. And they were laughing. I was laughing. And it was the funniest thing. And that was my first welcome to Thung Buddy in Bangkok. Welcome. That was my first welcome. This is during the rainy season, so I had to stay dormitory style on the third floor. And when I was coming down the next morning, I woke up bright and early. You could smell all the orchids, you could smell all the spices, you know, and you could hear the Thai music and all everything, and people hustling and bustling, going about their daily life. And I decided to come down the steps to see, because it's actually my second day, because it's overnight, and just see. And I was very excited to see. And I came down 1, 2, 3 flights. And it was still, it was about, I would say about 5:30 in the morning. You could barely see the lines in your hand. And when I got to the main floor, I took a step to go across the room. I took about 1 or 2 steps, and I said, that was one. Then I heard another one. Then I heard 4 or 5. And it was dimly lit. And when I looked, I thought, I thought they were hyenas. I was so terrified. I backed up slowly until I got to the first landing. And when I got to the first landing, back to the third floor. And to this day, all of my monk friends in Thailand that are still living and know me, they still tease me about the hyenas. Because they wasn't hyenas. They were temple dogs. They just happened to look like hyenas. Because we have a lot of dogs and cats in the temple. And it just happened to look like that. And that was another wonderful experience. Because back in those days, they used to have very fast drivers. Now it's much better. And you have to learn how to cross the road and how to go here from A to B properly. And then if you're wearing the monk's robes, you have to be extra mindful. And this is where you learn how the people themselves will help you when you in some type of predicament, not sure what to do or something like that, Or you go on the bus, and then the back row seats they have especially for the monks where they usually sit, And you want to get on the bus, but you see that maybe have the whole back row elderly ladies sitting in the back. Then you don't get on that bus. You stay off that bus and you wait for the next bus. And you're mindful of everything you do. You're mindful, 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 mindful. And that's part of the reinforcement of your practice. That reinforces your practice. You see, here we don't have that type of mindfulness, but we have to be mindful in other ways. Mindful for your safety, mindful that you're crossing the street correctly. Mindful that you don't get yourself in any kind of situations or trouble. We have mindfulness too. We have to always be mindful, always be aware. That's why I say, when we are outside in our own personal environments, that is our best teacher in your practice. Or in our practice, that is our best teacher. That really helps us to balance our practice and to see it, to see how it's working. But like I said earlier, once you discern for yourself the Dhamma, what the Buddha taught us, and how to practice it, once you discern that for yourself, then you can proceed much more confident, not only in yourself in your daily life, but also in your practice. Also in your practice. And also you're interacting with others as well. With other human beings, other creatures, sentient beings in the world. You learn how to interact with that. You also learn that we are all interconnected. Whether we like it or not, we are all interconnected. But at a deeper spiritual level. Not a physical, but a deeper spiritual level. If we all went through life and we all looked the same, wouldn't that be kind of boring? If we all was the same? But when we become like rainbows and see the beauty of all the different things in this world, then you can see that. That's what our ancestors try to teach us, the beauty of nature, of the world, and all the different things that's in it. And that we can learn and be in tune to and balance with. And these are the things what the Buddha tried to teach us first. Then maybe one day in the future, or maybe in the future life or something, you may obtain liberation. Unless you really, really, really are the perfect person, then you might be able to obtain liberation in his life. No one knows. It's up for grabs. It depends on what we want. I myself, I follow the way of the Bodhisattva, you know, and I want to keep coming back. That's my wish. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But when the time comes for me to find out if it's true or not, yes, I would want to come back and to help people, like just like I do in this life. You know, that's a vow that you make to yourself and to the universe. And once you make that vow to the universe, you hope that you can return to bring some benefit to all sentient beings. All sentient beings. What time is it now?
It is 10:35. You want to take some Q&A?
Yeah. So let's have some Q&A right now, if you feel comfortable. Question and answers.
I was curious when you made the transition from Catholicism to Buddhism. Was there some fundamental precept that really resonated with you that sort of drew you into Buddhism in general?
So kind of, I could hear the last part.
Some sort of underlying precept or teaching that made you transition from Catholicism to Buddhism.
No. Excuse me. I'll tell you what happened. Pope John the 23rd, he, in his wisdom, was trying to find ways to help the Catholic Church, the priests, and the religious communities. And he asked the enclosed monastic communities to volunteer to go and study meditation with set meditation masters in the East. And that's how I got involved in going. I saw I'm one of the volunteers. I'm not the only one, but there were many volunteers that came under what we call Vatican II. They came under that category. And I went to study. And I stayed. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's so intriguing and it was so interesting to me, I lost track of time. So now I've been with us pretty close to 56 years. 56 years ago. Yeah, so that's how I got involved, you know. And I'm still very active in the church as well, too, especially the Coptic Church, and working with them and helping them in certain circumstances and situations, and trying to create interreligious dialogue so that religions work together more than fight. I'm a part of that program as well.
Do you know the story of the death of Thomas Merton?
Thomas Merton?
Do you know how he died?
Yes.
Can you tell that story?
Okay. Are you familiar with Thomas Merton? Okay, I'm going to tell you both sides because there's controversy, of course. There's always drama. And Thomas Merton was a Trappist, just like I was. But he was in Gethsemane in Kentucky. And he wrote a number of beautiful books about the Trappist order. And it brought many men and women to come in to join that particular order. And he wrote many. Then he sort of began to grow. He became involved in things like Zen and Eastern religions, you know, civil rights, and all these things. But yet he was in an enclosed order. He was the first one to become a hermit in the Trappist community and have a hermitage. He became in interfaith dialogue and all these things, working with other religions. And so he went on a tour. He even met Dalai Lama, Namar Swamis, and all the places in the East. And he went to a conference. And it was at this conference that he went back to his room to take a shower, to cool off. It was in Thailand. And to cool off. And there was a faulty fan. And that's how he died. He was electrocuted. But the controversy is, you got to have drama. So they were trying to say that the Catholic Church wanted to get rid of him because of his involvement with East and West. But it's not true. It's not true. It's not the first time the Church has been involved with East and West. They was involved with East and West in the 15th century as well. It just didn't pan out as well as it was this time around, starting in the 60s, and with the Jesuits and different religious communities involved for centuries with interreligious dialogue. But it's more profound and stronger nowadays than it was in the past days. But that's how he passed away, was he was electrocuted. Okay.
I thought the controversy was that he, with the Dalai Lama and another high Lama was studying Dzogchen, and that produces an instant enlightenment, and there were some speculation that getting electrocuted was the occasion for his instant enlightenment.
Well, it's kind of a hard way to be enlightened. I don't know about that. I don't know if I want to be enlightened. That's kind of rough. No, but the thing was, when the Dalai Lama and Thomas Merton met, they met mind to mind. And the Dalai Lama said just how wonderful this person was, so enlightened. He praised him for his spiritual wisdom and heart, and emotions and feelings that Thomas Merton had. And Thomas Merton did the same thing to the Dalai Lama and things like that. They met mind to mind. So, and it was at a place in, then he went to Sri Lanka, and that's when he had his first Buddhist mystical experience, was when he went to Sri Lanka. And he saw this special Buddha image, and something happened for him at that time that really transformed him. And he wrote about that and talked about that. And Thomas Merton did.
And you practice as a Buddhist in Buddhism and having experience in Catholicism. Do you get to a point that you kind of forget all the bad emotions and feelings, and you get to a point that you kind of get rid of the guilt that Catholic Church teaches?
In my earlier period of doing the practice, learning the meditation practice, Zen, Satipatthana, the Tibetan practices, and all those things that I learned with my earlier teachers, that guilt just melted away. I can't even tell you when it... One day I woke up and it wasn't there anymore. It just, it was gone. And then that really opened me up for more experiences, coming closer to so many different people, being in so many different countries, you know, interacting with the people, and learning. For me, that is the best learning experience. So if any of you have a chance to go and do it, do it. Because that is your best teacher. Travel. Mm-hmm. That is your best teacher. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of melted away. You know. And you felt lighter, freer, and more open to all different kinds of possibilities.
What do you see the difference being and similarities as far as death and the between Catholicism and Buddhism and in your own belief?
In my own life? Well, coming from a monastic background, you see a lot of similarities. The only difference is object of worship and some of the philosophical things you might see that that are slightly different, but yet at the same time not different, because emphasis is not placed on those things. The emphasis that placed on the things you find in Buddhism is different from the emphasis that you find placed in what you Catholicism, you know. Catholicism is very devotional towards one object, whereas in Buddhism is very devotional to many different types of objects, you know. And you, when you go into the Buddhist world, you find so many different ways to practice, you know. Yet there's 40 meditation practices that was taught by the Buddha, 40. But over the years, these things expand and expand and expand, because as we learn, our own practices become a way to help others too. So in a sense, we all are teachers, are working towards graduation to become teachers, to benefit all sentient beings. All sentient beings. And that's how I see the difference is there. The difference is there.
I find it interesting. I don't know, as a person of color, I've often felt that I actually didn't fit into any religion, specifically Catholicism, and, you know, various Christian forms. It just, it seems so oppressive. And so when I first started to study the Dharma, it was like the one thing I felt that maybe made all beings equal, if that makes sense. So it's really interesting to hear in your talk how there are a lot of lines that are parallel. And not only that, but I guess it's even more important for you to at some point know when you have to, like, dismiss some of those things that, like, the guilt in Catholicism or the oppression you may feel by being a Baptist woman or whatever it is, like, you get deeper into, you know what I mean? You get deeper into that yeah. self that tells you you are fine, mm-hmm. who you are, you know what I mean? And you are not broken.
That's true, yeah, yeah.
So thank you for mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. It you know, thank you.
Mm-hmm. But see, that's the thing we have to learn how to work on. Each one of us have to work on all those things. And each one of us have something in our lives in the past, way back when, that we have to work on and bring it to the surface so that we can eventually let it go and let it go. But like I said earlier, it's not going to happen overnight, because there's a lot of painful things that have happened to all of us. We just don't remember all of them. And from my own personal experiences, the older you get, you're going to start remembering. Because I remember some very bad things that happened to me when I was 4 and 5 years old. And they're coming up now. But do I have hate, anger? No, I feel more compassionate for the people that caused the problem because they didn't know any better. They were sick. You know, we have to face this. There's a lot of sickness in our society. It's a beautiful country. I love my country. But we have a lot of screw loose all over the place here. But we have to work on ourselves. On ourselves. Whether we get help with therapists, psychiatrists, or psychologists, that's fine too. Spiritual leaders, that's wonderful too. But when it comes down to the bottom line, we have to work on ourselves. And we have to decide. You know, because once you make the change in your life, whatever it is that you need to make, whatever change you need to do in your own personal life, when you do it, no one else on this planet can take it away from you. No one can take it away from you. And then you have the confidence. Wow, I've done that. I did it. You know. And that's it. Then you move forward. You know, when it comes to those things. Because we all have faced some type of painful situation in our lives, somewhere, somehow. You know, we're faced with that.
Okay. We've got about 10 more minutes.
Okay. Any more questions?
My understanding as to what we can speak to this is that within the Christian tradition, there are some forms of prayer that are very, very similar to meditation, you know, so like, you know, we think, and I grew up Catholic, you know, so my experience with prayer was, you know, saying the Lord's Prayer, or, you know, the Hail Mary, things like that. But then over the last few years, I kind of had learned that there's actually some forms of prayer, and I think that they might be more rooted within the contemplative traditions that are almost exactly, as far as I could tell, you know, what we practice in meditation, in Vipassana meditation. And I was wondering if you can just kind of speak to that.
Okay.
Clarify that.
I'll give you some examples, and then if you want to look it up and research it, St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa of Avila. And she was very famous. She started the Carmelite nuns, the Reformed Carmelite nuns. When they pray, they're enclosed daughter. They're strictly enclosed daughter. And when they pray, they sit cross-legged. In the, like a meditation posture, they sit cross-legged, and when they say their prayers, or they kneel, and they say their prayers, and their prayers, is, you can look at, research, and you can read some of her writings and things, and you can see quite a connection there. Brother Lawrence, which is very strange even to a lot of Catholics, because through his own personal prayer, he had a Buddhist experience. But he's Catholic. And he'd done it through Catholic prayer. But he had an insight, you might say. A powerful insight. His name was Brother Lawrence. Little Flower, Saint Teresa, another Saint Teresa. We call her the Little Flower. You're familiar with her, you know. And my own personal experience that set me on my own path to where I'm at today was done through Our Lady of Guadalupe. Now, why is that? And when you think about Our Lady of Guadalupe, you're thinking about the ancient Mayan Aztec god, Yesuquito. That's who you're thinking about. But she come in the form of Our Lady of Guadalupe for some reason. And then that's why a lot of people, indigenous people, actually joined the church freely. Because before then it wasn't free. It was more forceful. But, yeah. And there's a lot of others, too, as well. A lot of writings and things. And they come through what they call contemplative prayer. It's much deeper than regular prayer. And it also involved, like what I said, silence. You have to be quiet. You have to be very silent for it to come up. So it's a lot. And if you're interested in that, there's a lot you can research on that on the internet. You could Google it. There's a lot of trend notes. And you'll see there's still an interconnection. There's not a separation. Yeah. And then over the years, we learned that we're interconnected. And maybe this is one of the reasons why we are all coming together, or all being forced to come together. Maybe this is one of the reasons. But we'll find out soon enough. What's time will tell. We'll find out.
If I have time for one more question.
Okay.
One more.
As a Catholic, I learned to follow the prayers, talking about prayers, and you have to follow the prayer in the way they are. It's reading in the paper. But in Buddhism, I'm finding out that you can kind of, there are some prayer. What I would like to ask you is, do you have the flexibility to kind of modify those prayers to yourself, to your own personal needs? Or is it something that you have to follow in the way Catholics follow those prayers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, in fact, you find that sometimes in the Tibetan tradition, a lot of the lamas will write prayers. In the Vietnamese tradition, we write certain prayers, like for the Buddha birthday that we just had last month. My abbot, he wrote certain prayers that the whole community recited in respect and honor to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. There's a lot of people that do that. But always keep in mind, the Buddha is the teacher. He's the doctor. He's not the deity. And once you keep that in mind and distinguish between the two, it's very helpful, helpful for us. You go to the temple, you offer flowers, incense, fruit, and do all those things like that, you don't do that at the meditation center, do you? Bring flowers, fruit, incense.
East Bay Meditation Center? Well, we don't burn incense.
But you bring fruit, flowers, and all that, right?
Yeah, some people make offerings.
So you can do those things. Or you can do it personally at home with your own. If you have a little altar at home, you can do all those things like that. It is helpful because you're doing a real spiritual act. Some people don't like ritual. I'm a ritual fanatic. You name it, I can do it. So I'm into ritual stuff. Because it calms my mind, and I'm doing something in hopes that it'll benefit maybe someone else. You know what I mean? Or myself as well. Okay, that's it.
That's it.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for putting up with me today. I was going to be very but I wait. I still have one more time, and we'll see how the retreat goes, and then I'll let you know some other things, because I'd like to share with you what I have, because what I have learned, and then hope that you'll find a way to have the same experiences in your own personal life, and that's my hope in prayer. So I give you a short blessing and then I close that, okay? Okay. Sapyetiyo vivajantu sabarogo vinasatu ma devavantarayo sukiti kayugo bhava mamantu sabba mangalan raddhanta sabba devada sabba buddhanu bhavena sadasoti mamantu ne Bhavantu sabba mangalan raddhantu sabba devata sabba dhammanu bhavena sadasodhi bhavantu ne Bhavantu sabba mangalan raddhantu sabba devata sabba sanghanu bhavena sadasodhi bhavantu ne So may all the blessings of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha guide each and every one of you, and let us have a beautiful and wonderful retreat. Thank you.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
So we'll have a break now for 15 minutes, or you can start.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.